This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
In studio with us this morning, we have attorney John Day. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm a little tired, Scott, to tell you the truth. Good morning to you. I went to a concert in the Ryman Auditorium last night, and so it was a school night, or should I say a radio night, which means I didn't get the sleep that I needed, but here I am.
It's always cool to go to concerts there. There's something about that environment inside the Ryman that just feels more personable.
Yeah, it is a wonderful, special venue, and I'm glad to see that the Gaylord operation has kept it. There's a full house last night for this concert. It was great.
This time of year, there is a lot happening, a lot of folks out shopping, going from store to store. I mean, there's just a lot out there and a lot of cars on the roadway. And I know parties are one of those things that people attend this time of year, and with those parties comes sometimes drinking and driving.
Yeah, it's a real problem during most of the year, but this particular time of the year, there is an increased number of social events, and a lot of those social events involve consumption of alcohol, which gives rise to not only people getting arrested for driving under the influence, but also for people getting involved in wrecks and either hurting themselves or someone else. We've been able to help many, many people, hundreds of people over the years who have been the victim of drunk driving accidents. It's a tragic thing that is so easily avoidable, especially today in urban areas like Murfreesboro, where you can call on the services of Lyft or Uber and get away home if you have had an extra drink or two.
You know, sometimes I just wonder if you could just communicate the message to folks, hey, don't drink and drive, period. But it's impossible to do that because no matter what, you're going to have those who go out there and drink and drive.
The fact of the matter is, and we can debate why this is so, but alcohol is a presence at almost all social events. Obviously, there are church events where it isn't present, and some weddings, they don't serve alcohol, etc., but most office parties, most gatherings of business groups that take place after 5 o'clock, alcohol is going to be served. And some people do not consume with caution. And I understand it. I mean, I grew up in Wisconsin, Scott. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't.
Well, yeah, I grew up in Wisconsin, lived there until I was 21. And Wisconsin is a huge beer drinking state, very significant, I'm going to say, problem with alcohol consumption in that state. I grew up in that environment. I attended bar in two different places between the ages of 18 and 19 and ran a bar with 27 employees starting at the age of 19 until I graduated from college, a full-time job. So I'm not opposed to drinking. But I am opposed to people taking the lives of others because they aren't exercising responsibility while they drink. It's one reason, Scott, why we started the Safe Ride Home program. The Safe Ride program started, I believe, 7 years ago. It might have been eight. And what we do on New Year's Eve is give people in Murfreesboro a safe ride home via Uber in the late evening hours of New Year's Eve and going on until the early morning hours of 2025. So I hope that people will take advantage of that. We'll reimburse an Uber ride of up to $25. And I know it's inconvenient to have to figure out a way to get back to your car the next morning. I understand and appreciate that. But this way, anyway, you can maybe afford to take an Uber there and then take one home on us. And if anybody's interested in taking advantage of that, there's a code available on our Facebook page, John Day Legal Facebook page. And go ahead and get a code and please use it on New Year's Eve if there's any doubt about your ability to drive home safely.
You know, when you look at alcohol and the damage it potentially causes because of those who are not responsible, it's eye-opening.
Well, it's a tragedy. Yeah. When you think about it, I mean, when you really, really think about it, it is a tragedy. Obviously, there are people whose home lives are ruined through the consumption of alcohol. There's people who lose job opportunities or job advancement opportunities as a result. There are kids who are affected by seeing their parents consume alcohol in an inappropriate way. And it impacts just generations of people, family, friends, neighbors. It's just horrible. And then when you have somebody with, I'm not going to say that everybody who drives drunk is an alcoholic. I don't think that's true. When you have somebody who doesn't take into account their responsibility as a driver, taking a vehicle on the road that weighs 2,000 to 3,000 pounds that can go 120 miles an hour. And after having a few drinks, it's just tragic to see people do that and gamble with their own life and the lives of others.
You've worked a lot of cases over the years, and I know probably a good percentage of those cases involved alcohol in some way with somebody who got behind the wheel of a vehicle and shouldn't have been driving, and then they run into somebody else. But I'm curious, are there any cases that you have worked where maybe the person who was drinking and driving was behind the wheel of a large commercial vehicle?
I've only had a couple, and in those cases, it was not alcohol, it was narcotics. So we've represented people who have been hurt by drivers of commercial vehicles who were on methamphetamines, who were on plain old amphetamines. We see a lot of people in that position who have THC, which is the active ingredient, marijuana in their system. So yes, we see that, but usually it's not alcohol with people who are driving commercial vehicles. By commercial vehicles, I'm talking about trucks. I'm not talking about a car being driven around town with a placard on the side indicating it's a company vehicle. I'm talking about trucks, vans.
The lives that have been disrupted over the years because of somebody drinking and driving, now that there's no telling how many over the years that has happened to.
Well, I mentioned to you off air, we've represented hundreds of people who have lost their life or been seriously injured by drunk drivers. And I'm just a small law firm. You know, we've got 27 employees. We've got 8 lawyers. But there are lots and lots of lawyers who do what I do, and each of them have had the same experience. It's just a huge, huge problem.
Making this all even tougher is the fact that some of those who are arrested for drinking and driving and then cause a serious accident, some of them don't have insurance, and then that's a whole nother issue, a whole nother problem that family, the surviving family, has to face of whoever they hit.
Well, not only do some of them not have insurance, statistically it's going to be 24%.
Don't have insurance.
Do not have insurance. That's the rule. The general rule in Tennessee, Scott, is that despite the fact that liability insurance on your car is required, that's insurance that you buy to protect yourself from a lawsuit and help pay damages, money damages, to somebody who's hurt or killed by your mistake driving a car. Despite the fact that it is mandatory in Tennessee, 24% of the people on the road do not have it. So think of it in this way. This afternoon or Saturday, when you're driving to Kroger, or you're driving to Walmart, or you're going someplace on a casual trip, look at the cars coming from you in the opposite direction. One out of every 4 have no insurance whatsoever. So if they cross that center line, you are going to bear the brunt of that, not just physically, but also financially. And it is very, very scary. Yeah.
And because we're talking about how there is an increased level of drinking and driving this time of year because of things like Christmas parties, end of the year, New Year's parties. I mean, there's just a lot happening. But you also have to look at, well, how many of these folks have been overserved in a bar or at a party, maybe even a company party? And what happens in those cases where somebody is overserved at, let's say, for an example, a company party?
Well, let's identify how this works. First of all, a person who is overserved at a company party, in a bar, at a restaurant, who gets in a wreck and hurts themselves or is killed as a result of that, they have no legal rights whatsoever unless they're minors. And if they're minors and they did not present a false ID or something like that, but if they're minors, then they retain their legal rights against the seller or provider of alcohol. If the person who was injured or killed is not the person who's been consuming alcohol, but somebody else on the road, the law does permit a claim against the owner of the bar or restaurant that overserved. That is very, very possible. The problem is the law requires that you prove that type of case beyond a reasonable doubt. So the bar can only be responsible if they serve a person who is obviously intoxicated. So there is a big dispute over who is obviously intoxicated. There's some science out there that supports the notion that almost everybody who is 0.18 or higher, maybe 0.16, is obviously intoxicated. Although I will tell you, one time I had a case where a guy was 0.41. That's close to being dead. He was not obviously intoxicated.
He wasn't?
He was not. It's sort of interesting, quite frankly. I tried this case in Virginia, Wise County, which is the middle of coal country in Virginia. And my client got on a motorcycle with this guy at 11 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday to go for a ride around the beautiful countryside of Southwest Virginia and Upper East Tennessee. And they had a beer together before they got on the motorcycle. No doubt about that. Undisputed. 11 o'clock in the morning. May not be the brightest thing to do. But he wrecked the motorcycle. It was his fault. But when they tested him, he was 0.41.
How did that happen?
He had been drinking for the previous 24 hours. And what the testimony established was that he was drunk so much that people couldn't tell he was drunk. I got this guy to admit on the witness stand that he'd basically been drunk every single day for over 20 years.
Wow.
He worked as a car salesman. He was drunk every day at work. And it was never an issue such that he lost his job. He had been in several car wrecks. And he'd been drunk every single time in a car wreck. And the police never even tested him.
Because he came across as sober.
He came across as sober because he was always drunk. He was a stock car driver in a local NASCAR sanctioned dirt track.
Yeah.
I used to work in a pit crew of a dirt track stock car team, so I know the rules of the pit. You can't have alcohol in the pit. Now, maybe that is not true anymore. I don't know. This was 40-some years ago. But he would drink in the pit and was drinking while he was driving stock car. Man. And he never got caught, never got sanctioned. So my argument in that case, to protect my client from the argument that you got on the motorcycle with somebody being drunk, was if you're really, really good drunk, you can get away with it. So I tell that story. I apologize for digressing. That you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the bar served alcohol to someone who is obviously intoxicated.
Yeah.
And that can be a real challenge. Quite frankly, now that there are dash cams in most police cars and police officers are wearing body cams, that's a little bit easier to prove, because after the wreck, if that driver is conscious, they're talking to that driver and intoxication is pretty obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, usually.
Yeah.
Again, Attorney John Day in studio with us this morning. And when you look at, again, this time of year, what are some other things that you have seen as far as legal cases go that involve alcohol?
Well, we see a fair number of sexual abuse cases where women are raped after some sort of an event where there's alcohol involved, and quite frankly, often by both parties. We all know, those of us who do drink, that consumption of alcohol clouds judgment. and may bring out the worst in you. And so we see people who have called us who've said they've been raped. We see date rape drugs as being a big issue. People who go to bars and have a substance put in their drink that renders them unable to understand what the hell's going on, and they end up getting sexually assaulted.
So this is just not in movies. The date rape drugs, these are really out there in Middle Tennessee.
They are out here in Middle Tennessee, and I would tell any woman who is going to a bar in downtown Nashville, Broadway Street, 2nd Avenue, that you should never, ever, ever leave your drink unattended. And I would seriously consider, don't even leave it sitting on a bar and you sitting next to it. Hold it in your hand and keep it where you can go. You have complete control over what goes in and what goes out of it. I can't tell you the exact number. I should have looked it up. I bet we've had 10 or 15 calls on that this year.
Wow.
Where people believe that they had received a date rape drug in a bar in downtown Nashville.
That's really scary. I mean, talk about close to home, first of all. I mean, these are restaurants, bars that are right here in our area.
Right. And of course, the women are interested in, you know, how can this happen in a bar? Well, if you've ever been in a bar on Lower Broadway, you can see how easily it can happen.
Extremely busy places.
Extremely busy places. Lots of music, lots of noise, lots of action. Bartenders almost running to serve people and keep the alcohol flowing. It's awfully hard to make a claim against a bar under those circumstances. I can't figure out a way to do it in the cases we've looked at. And then you've got to try to be able to prove it.
Yeah.
How do you prove that you got the drug? It's going to leave your system, I can't remember if it's 24 or 48 hours. So unless you get promptly tested, right, for it, somebody thinks about it to actually do the test for it, it's going to be out of your system. How do you prove it?
Yeah, that's a hard one right there.
It is.
Now, being in the Music City area, and there's lots of entertainers here, have you had cases where somebody has sued one of the many entertainers that are in our area because of something that they did that caused some type of harm that led to them needing to be hospitalized?
I can't think. I personally have not sued any entertainers under that circumstance. I have seen a case. It's a well-known case in Tennessee, where a music producer held a party in his home where alcohol was being served to minors, and it ended up that somebody was horrifically injured in a wreck thereafter. And that was a case that was actually tried, so it wasn't settled out of court. It was tried in Nashville, I'm going to say 15 years ago, and help us better understand the law of what we call social host liability, that is, people who don't sell alcohol for money, but instead provide alcohol or allow alcohol to be consumed on their premises.
So social host liability, I mean, is that something that is like folks can look up and get a better understanding of it?
Yes. Yeah, that's something. If you Google social host liability in Tennessee, I'm going to have 1, 2, or 3 blog posts on it, maybe more, and a page on my website that discusses the circumstances under which a social host can be held liable in those situations.
You know, it just kind of made me think, so many people out there host parties. Maybe it is a work party, or maybe it's a party just with friends and family coming over. But you have to be so careful in this day and age as far as what you do, what you serve, and how you do it.
Yeah, I will say that the liability for social hosts is minuscule when it comes to adults consuming alcohol. The much bigger risk is when minors are served. In fact, I give a couple speeches every year to high schools where I educate high school students and their parents, because the schools bring the parents in, and I talk to them about the danger of these adult-hosted parties where the adults allow minors to drink.
And that happens a lot, too.
It happens a lot. It happens even at the places where I speak to the parents.
Yeah.
They still do it. But I will say, I'll give you an example. My daughter goes to one of these high schools.
Yeah.
So she was invited to a party. There was going to be like 80 or 90 kids there. The parents were home. And these parents did it right. Number one, you could not drive your own car to the party. You had to be dropped off and picked up by a parent.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Yeah. And the parents had to come to the door at the end of the evening and pick you up. When you got to the party, your shoes and socks would be taken off, okay? And any, if you had a backpack or a purse or something, the parents were going to look in it for alcohol. The reason they took the shoes and socks off is because what we all know that kids do is that they know there's not supposed to be alcohol at the party. So what they'll do is take it over and put it in some bushes or shrubbery, right, around the house. And then they sneak out of the house during the party and pick up the stashed alcohol. So the parents thought ahead and said, no, no, if you go out, we're going to be able to tell because your feet are going to have dirt on them, right, going outside. They also checked the yard before, in the area around it, before the party even started. And then, like I said, at the end of the night, you were expected to be there to pick up your daughter or son at 11 o'clock and come to the door and pick them up in person. I was proud of them for that.
It sounds like, though, the beginning, first 5 minutes of a Law & Order episode. Yeah. Well, what's going to happen next? Interesting. Again, Attorney John Day in studio with us this morning, and we're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at your Rutherford Farmers Co-op. If you're looking for that unique Christmas gift, please come see us. We have everything you need for your holiday season. We have the clothing that will keep you warm from our Carhartt to your feet with our muck boots. We also have a great selection of fashion clothing for our ladies. And if you're looking for a unique gift, say for your patio, we also have our wonderful handmade wooden furniture. That's all here at the Co-op Farm and Home Center just off of South Church.
This Christmas, as you gather with loved ones, take a moment to remember the reason for the season, to give thanks for all of God's blessings, and to honor those who have sacrificed so much for this great nation. Here's a special Christmas message from Senator Marsha Blackburn.
In this time of celebration, let us remember what a blessing it is to be a Tennessean, an American, and to live as children of God in the most extraordinary country in the world. As we celebrate the birth of our Savior, let us always choose to live by His word, to give thanks to those who serve us all, and to love our fellow Americans. From our family to yours, Merry Christmas.
I'm Marsha Blackburn, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Marsha for Senate.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. The friends you've made while banking right here over the years are still here, and so are those delicious, warm, homemade cookies. Everything you enjoyed about Capstar is still at Old National Bank.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Come on over and enjoy warm cookies with friends while doing your banking at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Attorney John Day is in studio with us this morning. So this holiday season, just like every holiday season before, you're going to have people who drink too much, who drive when they're drinking, or you're going to have companies that throw parties for their employees and their relatives, their wives, their husbands. And you have folks who may get hurt at those parties or drink too much and leave the party. But these are things that happen every year.
Yeah, that's right. Hopefully, the employers who throw these kind of events will have some sort of system to reduce the risk. You can't eliminate the risk, to reduce the risk of somebody making a mistake and getting in a car and driving after consuming alcohol. We're having our Christmas party on Friday night. And one of the things that we do serve alcohol at the party, but everybody has the right to get an Uber or a Lyft on my nickel for a ride home. And we just pay for it 100% of it.
See, that makes sense. Every employer needs to kind of think those things through whenever they're planning a company party.
Well, I think so. I mean, I love my coworkers, right? They're friends, and I've got one coworker who's been with me for 31 and a half years.
Wow.
I mean, we've grown up together, basically, right? It is, it can be expensive to do that, but that way, hopefully, they will get home safe, and that nobody else would be harmed by any mistake that they happen to make.
Do a lot of companies that do throw these parties, Christmas parties at the end of the year, do a lot of companies, even these big companies, do they not think things through and there's no rules or anything in place to say, hey, after the party's over, if you had too much to drink, we're going to make sure you get home safe and this is what we're going to do? But is that how the outcome usually is? People just don't think it through?
I think there are some people who don't think it through. I think, quite frankly, that's less of a risk with a larger company than a smaller one. In a larger company, they're going to have lawyers,
yeah,
or HR people who are dedicated to thinking about things like this. Hmm. What is the risk of engaging in this particular activity, whether it be a party or anything else? They got people who are paid to think about it. In a smaller company like mine or like yours, you may not necessarily go there, right? You may not think about that, not out of malice, but out of ignorance.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would encourage any small business person who's hosting an event to think about what can I do to make sure my employees get home safely. And maybe that's not serving alcohol at all. Maybe it's limiting it to 2 drinks a person. Maybe it's whatever it is. Give it some thought. And this is one of those circumstances where if you take care of your employees, that is, you get them home safe, then the public doesn't have to worry about that because those people won't be driving.
Yeah.
And so you've also done something good for your community.
And then you have the other issue that could come up, and that is, what if somebody gets hurt at my party? They trip and fall. Maybe it's a stud that was sticking out somewhere and they tripped over it and I should have fixed that years ago. Or maybe they're drinking too much and they fall and they get hurt.
Well, in that circumstance, what we call the traditional law of premises liability will reign. And what I mean by that is this: a person who owns property or controls property is not responsible for somebody else tripping or otherwise falling on that property unless we'll just call it the property owner, but it could also be a lessee who controls the property, unless the property owner knows or reasonably should know about the existence of the hazard or they create the hazard. So let's take the typical grocery store. A grocery store is not responsible for a fall that was caused by a spilling of some substance by an employee, I mean a non-employee,
yeah,
by a customer, unless the store knew or should have known about the substance being on the floor. The law doesn't require you to have a clerk with an apron at the end of every aisle waiting for a customer to spill something so it can be properly mopped up. They only have to exercise reasonable care to be on the lookout for spills or other type hazards. Now, if a store employee creates the hazard, that's something different, right? They're responsible unless that's promptly cleaned up or there's prompt warning of it. But if it's a customer who creates it, they're not responsible unless they knew or should have known that it existed. So, as pertains to a holiday party, if they're having a holiday party on premises, they have no particular greater risk than they do any other day. And in fact, under those circumstances, any sort of injury that arises out of that is going to be covered by workers' compensation. And they could only have a workers' compensation claim brought against them if the employer is the owner of the building, not a personal injury lawsuit.
If you have a situation where, let's say, inside the business or the company, there is a tile floor in the entry area, and one of the tiles is loose and there is, I guess, an expectation that that business should have known about that loose tile because they wax and buff those floors once a week, and that tile's been loose for a year now. And you should have noticed that tile being loose when you waxed and buffed that floor just a few days ago, and somebody slipped because that tile was loose and they fell to the ground and broke some part of their back even. Things like that. That is something where folks, owners of the business or whatnot, should know this is something that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, that's an example of what we call constructive notice. They knew or should have known if they're properly maintaining that floor, and if there's evidence that that loose tile should have been seen or likely was seen as part of floor maintenance. Let me give you a great example of this. About 15 years ago, I sued Ted Welch. Do you remember Ted Welch?
I remember the name, but
very prominent Nashville businessman, very nice guy, very active in Republican politics, a huge fundraiser for George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush. And he owned this building in Nashville. My guy was walking down the steps. And you know how a lot of steps, concrete or metal, have the rubber caps on them?
Uh-huh.
There's a rubber surface, and then it goes over the lid.
Yeah.
Well, as he's walking down the steps, he lifts his heel up, puts weight on the front of his foot, and the the rubberized cap on the end of the step gives way under his feet.
Oh.
3.5 inches wide, about a half an inch deep. And he loses his balance and gets a brain injury because he fell down 4, 5, 6, 7 steps, gets knocked unconscious, etc. So how did I prove that Mr. Welch, who is very much a gentleman, by the way, during that entire case, how did we prove that he knew or his building operations should have known about that? I went out to the scene and took photographs of all the steps in the building. And there were lots of places where that had occurred. It had broken off.
Ah, so this was happening throughout the building.
It was happening. And it wasn't anybody's fault from the standpoint of these things just break down over time. But what we argued and successfully got the case resolved based on this argument is that when you see what's there to be seen, that is, you see these caps starting to break off, that tells you that the caps that haven't broken off yet will. And it's time to replace the caps for all of them. And that's all part of just normal building maintenance. So we proved notice in that case in that way.
So it is very important to take preventive measures to make sure you have your building up to par. And if, you know, one step's messing up, you better look at all of them.
Well, and just, yes, paying attention. I mean, we have a raised piece of sidewalk in front of my house. And I noticed it and went out, and it's about a half inch where one part is either raised or one part sunk. I don't know which. But in any event, that is a trip hazard for somebody.
Yeah.
So I've hired somebody to come out and fix it. It's going to cost $300. I don't particularly like to spend $300, but people walk on our sidewalks in our neighborhood. I don't want to be responsible for one of my neighbors tripping on this in the dark, or, you know, I mean, there's street lights, but if you know, it's dimly lit. It's part of the responsibilities of home ownership, or if you run a commercial building ownership.
If you are injured on somebody's personal property, as an example, let's say their house, in those cases, those homeowners have homeowners insurance. But what does the policy actually cover if you are injured out front in somebody's house on their property?
It covers any liability of the homeowner or members of the homeowner's family for negligent acts or omissions that cause injury or property damage to another. Homeowner's insurance is very, very important. The good news is most people who own a home have homeowner's insurance because most people have a mortgage, and the mortgage company insists that you buy a policy to protect yourself from fire loss and, or wind or whatever it is. But those policies always include a what we call general liability component, where if the homeowner makes a mistake or is alleged to make a mistake, they have an insurance company that will provide them a lawyer and will pay up to a certain dollar limit for any harm they've been determined to cause.
That dollar limit for the average homeowner is not, you know, extremely high, is it? Or is it capped?
Yeah, it's capped. You can buy what you want to buy, but a lot of people have $300,000 in liability insurance coverage on their home. You can buy $1 million, and then you can buy on top of that what they call an umbrella or an excess policy, which is another policy that stacks on top of your liability policy that provides you even more protection.
Now, when you look at a huge company, some big corporation out there, they've got insurance that covers, you know, well, if somebody falls on our property, we're going to cover the cost of medical, you know, that recovery process. But most of these companies out there, it's a different story as far as the limit they have, I guess. You're looking at a much higher level of insurance.
Yeah, most companies are going to have, of any size, are going to have at least $1 million, and many will have more than that. In fact, some companies are so big that they don't even have insurance for, say, the first $500,000. They will just pay those claims out of their pocket, because the first, in that circumstance, $500,000 worth of insurance coverage is pretty expensive, because that's where most of the claims are. So they're not worried about those as much as they are the horrific things that can happen. And that's where they buy their insurance, to protect themselves from that.
Now, if there were a case where, let's say, five people were injured at once because of a fire due to something inside that commercial building, do these companies have enough insurance to cover these massive casualties that could occur?
Some do and some don't, right? I mean, it depends about the sophistication of the person who's buying it, how good of agent they have to explain to them what they likely need, what their prior experience was, and what they think they can afford. Are there lots of people who have an inadequate amount of insurance? Yes, there's lots of them, because people think that it's never going to happen to me.
Yeah,
that's the way people think. And I understand that, and maybe that helps people live without extra stress and anxiety. But I am here to tell you, you can get hurt as a result of somebody else's mistake, and you can make a mistake that will hurt somebody else. It happens every single day. Last year in Rutherford County, 39 people were killed on the highways. In this county, 39. It's been 39 the last 2 years. I don't know. I can't remember what the number is so far this year. So I guarantee you that every single person who died in those wrecks did not think that was going to happen to them when they woke up that morning. I can also guarantee you that every single person who caused that wreck, if it was somebody other than the person who died, they did not wake up that morning and think, I'm going to cross the center line when I'm fiddling with my phone. I'm going to miss that red light because I'm adjusting the radio station. Nobody thinks like that.
No.
Right? So I'm one of these people who believes that I want to waste every single dollar I spend on insurance. I mean, every single dollar. I hope I never get sued. I hope I don't need the coverage I have. But if I also recognize that I'm human and fully capable of making a mistake, and therefore I'm going to buy what I think I can afford and a little bit more.
When a company gets sued and they have to pay out whatever the winning amount is that's, you know, awarded by the courts say this is the amount, the jury spoke, whatever the case is, have you seen businesses to where they end up going out of business because of a lawsuit?
Yeah, there's that does happen. I'm involved in some cases right now where a company made defective knee and hip implants. And there's been It's either 37,000 or 39,000 claims. And that company has just filed for bankruptcy. They were facing the first trial in December this month in Florida, and they have gone under. So yes, it does happen. They were grossly underinsured. They don't have the assets. It's catastrophic to the people involved. I'll give you an example of one of my clients. Obviously, I won't use a name, but this gentleman had a knee replacement. He was in excellent physical condition except for a bad knee. I mean, he could do, at the age of 72, 19 pull-ups. Okay, you work out, you know how hard it is to do a pull-up.
Yeah.
Imagine it at 72 years old, and imagine doing it 19 times. Okay. Yeah. He went through it, but just going through the knee replacement, you lose muscle, mm-hmm. you know, you lose endurance, but he fought his way back. His knee is given out again. They're supposed to last about 15 years. It failed because of this defect. And so he had to have another knee replacement, but now he's trying to come back at the age of 80.
Wow.
You know, just horrible. And there's 39,000 people who have had this same problem. And right now it looks like they're going to end up with $31,000 apiece.
Man.
Because that's all the money there is. There might be a little bit more, but that's not enough to pay for the second knee replacement.
No, not at all. Again, attorney John Day in studio with us this morning, and we're already out of time, but as we close this morning, just a reminder, those sober ride homes that you're giving or allowing for, tell us about that real quick.
Yeah, New Year's Eve here in Murfreesboro. If go to our Facebook page, and you'll have the opportunity to download a code where we will pick up the tab up to $25 on any New Year's Eve Uber ride that you need to get yourself home. So please take advantage of that and have fun, but be safe.
Again, attorney John Day, you can learn more about John Day or using his services at johndaylegal.com. And John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Right now, that time, 9 o'clock, local news comes your way right now.
Now, an update from the WGNSRadio.com News Center.